What's going on? Good morning. Anybody excited to be here today? All right, all right. Thank you. Hey, boiler up, anybody? Come on now. All right, all right. That's awesome, isn't it? Hey, my name is Nathan. It is so good to be here. I don't know if you guys have felt it, but God has been on the move here at Revolution the last couple months. Man, last week was amazing, wasn't it? I loved it. 18 baptisms, 18 people stepping into new life. And so today, we're going to kind of go off that theme. Last week, we looked all about what Jesus offers us this new life. And today, we're starting a brand new series called Alive and Free. Everybody say alive. Everybody say free. Free. That's what we desire for you, to have a life that's alive and free. And we're going to be looking at a lot of things in this series, but the kind of tagline is alive and free, killing the things that are killing you. And so the whole verse, the whole idea off this series came from one verse in John, and it says this: the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I've come that you or they may have life and have it to the full. This is what Jesus is saying. These are Jesus' words. And here's what happens so many times when we read Jesus' words as Christians. Like, we just kind of, we don't read it aggressive enough. We kind of go like, the thief has come to steal, kill, and destroy. I've come that they may have life, and I have life to the full. Like, we kind of don't say it enough. We got to have some aggressiveness, some passion. Jesus is like, hey, listen, this is real. Life is real. You're on a journey, and life is real, and I'm real, and Satan is real, and heaven is real, and hell is real, and there's a battle for your soul every single day, and that there's a thief, and his name is Satan. He only wants to do three things: to steal, kill, and destroy. And I want you to have life, and life to its full. I want you to live alive and free. He's like, Satan wants to kill everything in your life, every single part of your life, your marriage, your relationships, your finances, your career, your talents, your freedom, your purpose. He's like, Satan wants to kill every single one of those. And sometimes in life, we live in life trapped, and we're living life, and we're not alive and free, but we're getting destroyed, we're getting killed in our personal life. And so in this series, we're going to look at some certain things. Today is going to be like the 101. Like, how do I step into this life? Like, what do I do? I'm following Jesus, so what's the next step? How do I start being on this path of change and living alive and free? And we'll be looking next week at complacency. We'll be looking at anger. Anybody know somebody that's angry all the time, right? Hop on social media. We'll be talking about that in a couple weeks. We'll talk about comparison. And then 1 week's going to be really fun, called emptiness. What do you do when you've been trying to get something your whole life and you get it, and it's not what you thought it was? What do you do when you get those goals and hit those goals and those milestones, and you're like, man, this is going to fill me, but it doesn't? So we're going to be looking at all those things, and here's the reason why we're looking at alive and free. Jesus has won, so we're going to walk in victory and live alive and free. That's the plan. Anybody excited about that? Like, that's what this series is about. So we want to see God working in your lives. And that's why we did Luke, and now we're doing this. What does it look like for God to work in our lives? And so today, I'm going to start with this one idea. No one plans to mess up their lives, do they? Right? No one wakes up one day and says, you know what? Today's a good day to screw it all up. Like, it's awesome, right? Maybe anybody set goals? You have like 5-year goal, 10-year goal, and you're like, my 5-year goal is to mess up everything. Right? No one does that, do they? But how many of us still have messes in our lives? Right? How many of you have loved ones who still have messes in their lives? Like, you know, in high school, when I get my grades back, like, I didn't plan to get an F. I'm just not that smart. It just happened, right? Like, no one plans to mess up their lives. Yet, it happens to every single one of us. Every person in this room has had messes in their life, or in a mess, coming out of a mess, and might be going into a mess soon. And then you start thinking about this. Okay, no one plans it. And it happens to every single one of us. And then I kind of realize this. It doesn't happen all at once. Sometimes we convince ourselves it's one bad decision. It's like, man, it was just a moment of weakness. It was just one bad day. And sometimes that's the case, but very rarely is it one bad, you know, moment. It doesn't all happen at once. It's a series. It's a slow burn and a gradual slide of compromise. It's one misstep. It's one bad decision that led to another bad decision. It's when I know I should have said no, but I said yes anyways, and I keep saying yes to the things I don't want to say yes to, and I say no to the things I really want to say yes to. It's one relationship. It's one night. It's one hit. It's a slow burn, a gradual slide of compromise. And then my mind just gets working. I have ADD, right? That's why I move a lot, right? My mind got to working. Okay, it's a slow burn. It doesn't happen at once. And then I realized, you're never more than a couple bad choices away from disaster yourself. And that really should cause us to pump on the brakes. Like, listen, if we see someone who's in a mess, we probably shouldn't get on our high horse and say, hey, I'm better than them. We should say, man, I don't want that to be my story. Or, man, I got to show them some grace because I was there before. We're going to be careful because that could be me. We're all a couple bad choices away from disaster. Think of it relationships or relationally, right? Maybe marriage. You know, you got TikTok, you got Instagram, you got Facebook, you got X, you got Snapchat. And all of a sudden you get a message from that one person that you know you probably shouldn't get a message to. Instead of hitting block, you open it and you start responding. And it may start off innocent, but eventually, you know, down the road, it leads to a little bit of disaster. How about financially? Some of you have a problem. It's called Amazon. I know it, right? Your best friend is the Amazon delivery person, right? Like, that's the person, like, I don't have much social contact, but I see them every day. We talk, right? And you're like, yeah, I can't really afford it. But it's just like, here's the biggest lie. It's just $5. It's just $10. Yeah, if you buy one thing, Mike Barron, 50 things later, it's like, yeah, $50, you know, 50 times five, it's, I don't know what it is. It's a big number though, right? It's a lot of money. And then they come out with things like Sizzle, where you can pay, you know, no interest. You can buy a big purchase and pay for payments down the road. And Whitney had to tell me, like, listen, it's still your money getting paid, right? Like, you're still paying for it, right? And so financially, all of a sudden you make little purchases and you're like, man, it's kind of compounds. And all those Amazon boxes and products you have, they get out of the house with you because you're sitting on the curb because you can't afford your house anymore, right? A series of little events. Maybe it is, like, let's be real, maybe it is addiction or a substance. And you know, like, hey, I've been battling it for a while and I've beaten it, but you had a bad day, a bad week, a bad month. And you're like, I know I shouldn't, but it's just one time, what's it gonna hurt? Isn't that the biggest lie? It's just one time. Like, isn't that the most dangerous lie? Just one time. It's a series of events. And all of us at any given moment are never a couple, more than a couple choices away from disaster. Don't believe me, this is what Paul said. Paul wrote a letter to Christians. He says, be very careful then how you live. Not as unwise, but as wise. And all of us want to be wise. We want to make wise choices. But we live in a tension. Even Paul did himself. He's like, I don't understand myself. I do the things I don't want to do, and I don't do what I want to do. And he's like, and I live unwise at times, but we want to live wise. And Jesus wants you to live wise because he wants you to live alive and free in your marriages, in your careers, with your talents, in your relationships. He wants to do more in our lives than we can ever imagine. But so often, we find ourselves in a mess more than we find ourselves living alive and free. And no one plans to be in a mess, but we get there. So what if we can do this? What if we have a conversation today? And this is one of the conversations I have with people after they start following Jesus. We get them that first step. This is usually one of the first kind of conversations I have, like changing your life. Because this principle, what we're going to look at today, has been so life-changing to me, I have to share with people. And we've shared some of it in pieces before, but we're going to kind of put it all in one talk today. But what if I told you, you can check yourself before you wreck yourself? What if I told you that? What if I told you that there's a way to avoid disasters or have less disasters in your future? How many of you would sign up for that? Right? Because you know this. You know that looking back at your life and looking back at my life, and that's why I say up here, one of the requirements to be on the stage is to walk with a limp and not a swagger, right? That we're going to be real and authentic. Like, everybody who's up here is broken, and I've had a lot of mistakes, and I realized something, that my biggest regrets could have been avoided. I bet you your biggest regrets in life could have been avoided. I bet you your biggest mistakes that you wish you could take back could have been avoided, and that we could check ourselves before we wreck ourselves. So what we have to do is we got to apply a principle, and so here's how it starts. You look at some of the most important areas in your life, your marriage, your relationships, your future marriage if you're not married, parenting, your faith, maybe your career, maybe friendships. Like, you look at all these areas in your life, and we're going to apply something around these areas, kind of like a hedge of protection, but we're going to safeguard those areas. We're going to safeguard the most important areas in your life, the areas where God wants to work. And a safeguard is a personal standard of behavior or a behavior rule. So, like, as Christians, we know, as followers of Jesus, Jesus kind of laid out how we're to live, right? And that you're going to create in your life to reach. Here's why you do this. It may seem extreme, but you do this to reach the life that God has for you, the live and free life. And so these safeguards you create in your life, one of my favorite pastors calls them guardrails. And what they do is they prevent future damage, future collisions, future messes. And when you bump up against these safeguards, when you're looking at your life, and you say, I'm safeguarding these areas, when you bump up against them, an alarm goes off. Like, bro, back up, back up. You shouldn't be doing this, because if you cross this line, there's going to be some issues. And here's what we know. The safeguards you place or create today will shape who you become tomorrow. You want to change your life, change your safeguards. Take those areas where God wants to work, the most important areas of your life, safeguard it. And the way you kind of predict your future is by safeguarding. And the safeguards you have today will create who you become tomorrow, shape who you become tomorrow. And if you don't have those in your life, you're going to look like, man, I don't like who I'm becoming tomorrow. But if you want to change your life, if you're tired of the mess, tired of the chaos, tired of the dysfunction, tired of whatever it may be, Let's talk today. Let's just change the safeguards. So we're going to look at a story. It's going to be really fun. How many of you like to look at other people's mistakes and not have to do it yourself, right? I look at it and I'm like, man, let's learn from them. I'm glad I didn't go through it. That's what we're going to do today. And so we're going to look at a story, an account of someone who should have had safeguards, who should have known better, but didn't. And we're going to look at what three safeguards can we learn from that situation. And here's what I'm going to say. Every single safeguard we talk about, just three of them, is something that every single one of us should apply to our lives. And it may sound extreme, it may sound crazy, but if you want the life that God has for you, this is how we protect ourselves. So we're going to look at the life of King David. Now, David came onto the scene as, if you don't know the Bible, he came onto the scene as the little shepherd boy who killed Goliath. Everybody knows that story. He killed Goliath, becomes a mighty warrior. People cheer his name, like tens of thousands said, David, David, David. They love David. He becomes this mighty warrior. Eventually, he becomes the second king of Israel. Well, fast forward to his life. He's about 50 years older. 50 years older. So he's no longer the cute little boy. He's a grown man. And he's kind of at the peak of his powers, if you will. This is kind of the best version of David right here. And things are good. Things are really good. Maybe too good. And he's comfortable. And he's complacent. And a series of events are going to happen in just a moment. It's going to change everything in his life. So if you're following along, got your Bibles, it's 2 Samuel chapter 11. And it says this. Just notice what I highlighted. In the spring of the year, when kings normally go out to war. So this is what typically happens, and this is what should happen. When kings normally go out to war, so David's men are out to war, David sent Joab and the Israelite army to fight the Ammonites. And they destroyed the Ammonite army and laid siege to the city of Rabbah. However, David stayed behind in Jerusalem. Kings normally go off to war, but David decides to stay behind. One choice. So here's the first safeguard we learn. It's really easy. Be where you're supposed to be so you can do what you're supposed to do. Doesn't that sound like your mom would give that advice to you as growing up? Like, hey, be where you're supposed to be to do so you can do what you're supposed to do. I would say, even though this is so simple, if I could look at your life like a little snow globe, right? I imagine Buddy the Elf shaking that snow globe. If that was you, right? Looking at your life, and I could just shake it and see your past mistakes, I'm going to guess, I'm going to assume, and I know it's not always safe to assume, but I'm going to assume that a lot of your biggest regrets were two things. One, with people you probably shouldn't have been with. Or two, places we shouldn't have been, right? Anybody shake their head with me? You agree? Okay, right. That's my life, right? And so David, right away, where's he supposed to be? Off at war, because that's what kings do. Kings lead their men into battle. Where's he at? He's back in Jerusalem. So maybe right now you may find yourself in some messes or right on the edge of creating more messes without realizing it. Where's the place you're supposed to be so you can do what you're supposed to do? How about this? Where's the place you shouldn't be? That's a tough question. Uh-oh. Where's the place you shouldn't be? And that's different for all of us. For some of you, the hard reality is, man, sometimes it's a group of people that we got to pull ourselves away from. We love them, we're not better than them, but we got to pull ourselves away from them for a season, or maybe a long season, so we can get where we need to be. Maybe it's a coworker at work. Maybe it's just being around coworkers at work, right? Like just the way they act, interact. For some of you, let's be real, maybe it's the place in town or town you live in, where you know you can go and get that one thing that you're not supposed to get, but you can get it anytime you want. For some of you, maybe it's a bar. For some of you, maybe it's just a place that you know that no one else knows, but like, hey, I shouldn't be here. Maybe it's on the internet late at night. Maybe it's through TikTok. For me, I know my life, like there are so many places where I have to safeguard myself from. And I've shared this before. I grew up in a family that struggled with addiction. I grew up in a family that struggled with a lot of darkness and mess. And I watched my grandpa and both my grandpas and my father do the same thing. And I realized early on, like, hey, if I don't want that story to be my story, I gotta learn to safeguard it. Not because I'm better, not because I'm superior, not because I'm smarter, but because I want a different story. I have to safeguard my life. And it was hard. It is hard. But where's the place you shouldn't be? You know where David's place was he shouldn't be? Back in Jerusalem. Why? Because he's supposed to be out of war. Why? Because that's what kings normally do. And sometimes, even in this land, we fool ourselves. And this is the great misconception at times. Like, hey, well, I can be at these places because I won't fall. I'm not going to fall. But you know this. If you're somewhere where you're not supposed to be, you're going to eventually do what you're not supposed to do. Don't trust me? Well, there's a man named David who used to be a giant slayer, was a warrior, was a king. He actually was called a man after God's own heart. And one day, he was at a place where he wasn't supposed to be, and the story goes a little like this. Late one afternoon, it all starts one afternoon, right? Right? Nothing good happens late one afternoon because we're all ready to get off work, and the only good thing that happens in the mid-afternoon is a midday rest. He's napping. David's napping, right? His men are out fighting. David's napping. That's what I'm going to do about 12:30, 1 o'clock today. I'm going to be sleeping, right? David got out of bed and was walking on the rooftop of a palace. And as he looked out over the city, so he's like Old Testament version of TikTok scrolling. He's over out there, over his whole palace, probably the highest point. He's just looking out, and he's probably not the first time he's been there. And he's looking out, and he noticed a woman of unusual beauty taking a bath. How beautiful do you have to be considered in the Bible unusual beauty? Beauty, sorry, I said that, man. Slip, right? Total slip there, right? We're going to ignore that part, okay? I don't know anything about that, okay? But in the Hebrew, that word, unusual beauty, I'm not going to correct myself here, unusual beauty is described as she's fine. She's beautiful, right? So this is what I actually tell Whitney. This is how you should describe me. Unusually handsome. That's what she should describe me as. But right, she's unusual. There's this beauty to her. And David's looking at her, and he's like, hey, go find out who she is. Here's safeguard number two. Stay off your rooftops. What do I mean by that? Stay off your rooftops. Some of you, I literally mean, hey, bro, be careful on those rooftops, right? But what I mean for most of us, the rooftop is the place David's tempted. Where's the place you're tempted? What are the things that are tempting you? Whatever it is, stay away from it. I know it's extreme. I know it's extreme. But remember, we want to live alive and free. We want to live this life that God has for us. We got to make some changes at times. Stay off your rooftops, because David is on this rooftop and he sees that temptation, and you know this is not going to be good because he's just focused on it. And he's like, hey, she is beautiful. Go find out who she is. And they come back and they said, her name is Bathsheba. She's taking a bath. Her name's Bathsheba. I always found that ironic, right? And she's the daughter of Eliam. David, somebody's daughter, bro. She's not just an object. She's somebody's daughter. So he's trying to humanize, because the servant knows what's going to happen. He's trying to humanize this woman. It's somebody's daughter. And oh yeah, she's the wife of Uriah. Remember Uriah? Uriah's your boy. He's out there in battle for you right now. You fought by him, side by side to Uriah before. And he's fighting for you right now, David. She's somebody's wife, David. She's somebody's wife, David. So David, what should he have done? Walk the way or turn around, right? Or at least go to the next rooftop. I don't know. Like, but stop looking at her. But he doesn't. And he stays looking and looking and focusing and focusing. And how many of you know? This is just reality. Wherever your focus is where you will go. Whatever you're focused on is going to get your attention. Whatever you're focused on, that's what you're going to think about. When you start thinking about it, that's where you're going to start heading. And so when that temptation's in front of you, that rooftop's in front of you, that's where you're going to go. Let me kind of make it real simple. How many of you love to go to the movies? Anybody? I love going to the movies, right? And so you never really go to the movies when you're hungry, do you? But every time you go to the movies, you probably buy some food. You buy some popcorn, some milk duds, some pop, whatever, right? And like, you buy the popcorn and you're not really hungry. But you're like, I'm going to get it just in case I get hungry, right? And so you go down, and you sit there, and you're like, you take one piece. Oh, that's good, right? Yeah, another piece is good. You're like, hey, I'm not going to take one by one. I'm going to take some handfuls. You start eating. You weren't even hungry. And then by about 5 minutes later, the previews aren't even done yet, and you're like, man, I'm halfway through this bucket of popcorn, and I didn't plan on eating any of it. You're like, bro, stop eating the popcorn. You're like, I can't, right? Now you got to sit in that tension, like, how do I kind of ration this the rest of the movie? Because the movie hasn't even started. I've ate most of it already. But you eat it because it's in front of you. You know the best way not to eat popcorn at the movies? Not to buy it. We're smart today, aren't we? Like, hey, don't buy it. Save a lot of money, too. You know the best way to stay off rooftops and avoid messes? Is to avoid the temptation it's easier to avoid the temptation than resist it. It's easier to stay away from it than it is to have it right in front of you, isn't it? Just say you're like, hey, I'm gonna lose some weight, right? I'm gonna lose some weight. Everybody who's been on that journey, I'm gonna lose some weight, gonna get in some shape. I'm gonna eat healthier. You know the best way to eat healthier is? Don't buy junk food. Because you buy junk food, you put it in your pantry, you know it's there. About 8:30 p.m., it starts to whisper to you, hey, Nathan. You know, that Twinkie gets real loud. Hey, Nathan, right? It's a lot easier to resist it if I'm avoiding it in the first place. Same goes with addiction. Same goes with relationships. Same goes with money. Right? Hey, maybe you spend too much money on Amazon. Maybe all of us should need to just take Amazon off our phone. We'll all be richer. I don't know, right? But it's easier to avoid temptation than to resist it. It's easier to stay off the rooftop that's going to create messes than it is to resist the temptation once you're on that rooftop. Mr. Miyagi said it in Karate Kid 2, something like this. He said, Daniel, son, it's easier not to get punched if you avoid the fight, right? He's like, don't fight. Like, you don't want to get punched? Avoid the fight. Karate Kid 2, by the way. Go check it out, right? Good movie, right? It's easier to avoid temptation than it is to resist it. But this is hard. It's hard. It's easier said than done because all of us are going through a thought process. All of us are making decisions right now. And they kind of say we go through different cycles when we're thinking. Sometimes they use 5 words, 4 words, 6 words. I found this and I read this not too long ago and I want to share it with you. It kind of talked about the cue, the craving, the response, the reward, kind of our thought process. And everything starts with the cue. So you're on the rooftop, and you see something that tempts you. Boom, it tempts you. And then there's the craving. Ooh, this is going to be good. I know what this feels like. I've been there before. Right? You get a little dopamine going in your mind. Like, okay, I've done this. I know it makes me happy. Then you have a response. Am I going to do it or am I not going to do it? And then you have to make that decision. And then you get a reward. The reward could be like, hey, I did it and it felt good for a moment. It may cause chaos later, but I did it. Or the reward could be, hey, I didn't do it and I feel good that I was able to overcome that. So this happens in every single one of us, especially when it comes by temptation. All of us are tempted, and temptation is not a sin. It's what happens after the craving, after the response. That's what happens during here that becomes the issue. Here, let's play it out for David. David, he's on a rooftop. Where he should be. His cue, he sees a woman, Bathsheba. She's beautiful. He gets a craving for that woman. I'll let you use your imagination what that means, right? He gets a craving. Then all of a sudden he has a response. We're going to look at his response. His response is going to not be good. News, like, kind of ruined the story for it. It's not good. And then he gets the reward. It felt good for a moment. And then he goes through this again. Cue, craving, response, reward. We go through all of this. But what's the first word? Cue. And what does this mean? Your cues determine what you do. So if we can avoid certain cues that are going to tempt us to do what we don't want to do, don't you think we can have less messes in our life? David should have had a safeguard, because here's what happens next. Then David sent messengers to go get her. And she came to the palace and he slept with her. She had just completed the purification rites after having her menstrual period. To that I say, God, that's way too much information, right? Like, I don't need that part, right? Then she returned home, and later when Bathsheba discovered that she was pregnant, she sent David a message saying, I am pregnant. That's not how he wanted this to go. Now he's got a bigger mess on his hand. This is, by the way, this is David, guy pursuing God, a man after God's own heart, the giant killer. This is how he's fallen. If he can fall like this, you and I can fall like this. He's in a mess. What am I going to do? Am I going to just come clean about it, or am I going to come up with a plan to fix it? Well, David comes up with a plan. It's not very good. It's a one-point plan that turns into a three-point plan, and it's not going to be very good at all. The first one is, he says, hey, to his servants, go get Uriah. Bring him back here. I'm going to talk to him. They bring Uriah back. They start talking, and he starts talking about the war. And David's like, yeah, hey, bro, you haven't slept with your wife for a while. Real awkward turn in the conversation. He's like, why don't you go home and do that? Because he's like, if Uriah sleeps with her, they can look like it's his baby, not my baby. And I might know, and she might know. And if it comes out looking like me, we'll just play it off. Right? I don't know, right? Like, that's what's going on. So Uriah says this. Yo, listen, how could I do that? My men are camping in the open fields. How could I go home to wine and dine and sleep with my wife? I swear that I would never do such a thing. He's like, bro, I got safeguards in my life. I'm a leader. You should be off at war. He's not, but I'm going to not do this because my men can't do this. It's a man of integrity. David's like, okay, plan B. Now I got to get him drunk, because if he's drunk, maybe he'll go home and do this. So they get all the fancy wine out. They have a big party. Uriah gets drunk. He starts going home. On the way home, he falls asleep. He crashes in the castle somewhere. He never makes it to his wife. And David's like, okay, what in the world? Plan C. Here it is. So the next morning, David wrote a letter to Joab, which was his assistant, and gave it to Uriah to deliver. So he sends Uriah back out to the battle. The letter instructed Joab, station Uriah on the front lines where the battle is fiercest. So stick this dude wherever the fiercest battle is. Then pull back so that he will be killed. So have him murdered. So Joab assigned Uriah to a spot close to the city wall where he knew the enemy's strongest men were fighting. And when the enemy soldiers came out of the city to fight, Uriah the Hittite was killed along with several other Israelite soldiers. Uriah is killed. Why? Why is Uriah killed? Because another man slept with his wife. The king of Israel, the man who is supposed to be the closest to God in the whole city. And instead of David confronting it, instead of David having safeguards in place, he's like, hey, I got to take out Uriah. And he has Uriah killed. Uriah, his buddy, David's friend, takes this letter that's sealed and literally has his death warrant on it and hands it to the general. And the general follows through. Well, Uriah dies, and kind of a couple verses later, it says when the period of mourning was over, Bathsheba was mourning, David sent for her, Bathsheba, and brought her to the palace, and she became one of his wives. Then she gave birth to a son. And then I read maybe the saddest words of David's life. He goes from being the man after God's own heart to this line. But the Lord was displeased with what David had done. Safeguard number three, make hard choices today to avoid hard consequences tomorrow. I'm a motivational quote junkie. I love motivational quotes. I love motivational podcasts. You may think it's cheesy, but it works for me, right? And so sometimes I imagine Rocky Balboa is in my head speaking to me, right? And so one of the quotes that I love is choose your heart. How many of you know life is hard? Life is hard, right? Life is hard. And sometimes it seems like it's just a series of hard decisions every day. But the good things that we want in life are also hard. Winning is hard. IU fans, that's why y'all not here. It's hard, right? It's hard. Winning is hard. Parenting. Man, there's a lot of things that have kicked my butt in life. I don't know if anything kicks my butt more than parenting at times. Right? It's hard. Marriage, man, it's awesome. Marriage is awesome. It's amazing. But there's seasons where it's hard. Following Jesus at times, guys, it's hard. It's hard dying to myself. It's hard following, loving people that are unlovable. It's hard at times to do what Jesus asked me to do. It's hard at times. But it's all about choosing your heart. Having safeguards in your life is hard. You know what's harder? Not having safeguards. Because sometimes safeguards is like waking up early, like if you're a runner, waking up early and jogging in the morning. You know, I'm at the age when I wake up now and my body hurts, I don't even know what I did the night before, right? Like, I hurt, right? It hurts, and you're cold, and you put on your shoes, it's dark outside, and it hurts the whole time while you're running, and you don't see any of the payoff until later. It's all down the road. Not having safeguards is like going to Sycamore. How many of you love to go to Sycamore, right? And get a Bubba, right? Extra large Bubba with cookie dough, double fudge, whatever, right? And it's all good right now. The pain comes down the road. It's hard to have safeguards. It's hard to live the life Jesus calls us at times. But you know what's a lot harder, I've learned? the consequences that come down the road for making the wrong decision. The consequences of bad parenting, consequences of broken marriages, the consequences of addiction, that's a lot harder, isn't it? It's about choosing your heart. David had an opportunity time and time again to choose the hard choice. One, first, the first step should not have been that hard. It was somebody else's wife, bro. Just walk to turn away. But he doesn't. Then he has the hard choice of coming clean with what he's done, and that's really hard. But he takes the easy step and says, I'll just have him killed. But choosing the hard steps now leads to the live and free life tomorrow. And maybe right now when God's trying to change your life, God's trying to work in your life, God's trying to do something amazing, and it's hard to change. It's hard to overcome something. It's hard to avoid the place. It's hard to avoid the people. It's hard to avoid the stuff. It's hard to take that next step. But it'll be worth it. And if we don't, we're going to find ourselves in messes that we don't want to be in, facing hard consequences that could have been avoided. Because David's life is so sad because this all could have been avoided with safeguards. Let me tell you how the rest of David's life basically plays out. David and Bathsheba have this baby. You know what happens to the baby? Tragic. It dies. David's house is always going to fight, go against itself for the rest of his life. One of his sons does something unspeakable to one of his daughters. It's crazy. One of his sons kind of basically leads a civil war against him. And David's life is never as good as it was before 2 Samuel 11. But it all could have been avoided. I don't want us to have to look at our lives 5-10 years from now and say that we're in this mess that could have been avoided by some simple safeguards. And it's hard, but it's worth it. So I think maybe as we start this series of looking at all these things that may be killing us, maybe we need to ask this. Just one safeguard. I'm not asking, maybe we need 40, but one today. What safeguard do you need to put in place to get to the life that God has for you? Look at your marriage. Look at your parenting. Look at your relationships. Look at your future kids. Look at your future marriage. Look at your relationship with sin, relationship with substances. Look at all those things. What safeguards do you need to put around them to get to the life that God has for you? And you may know, but I'm going to just tell you the truth. It won't just happen. Because just happening, or hopefully it happens, or I'm hopeful that it may happen, or having good intentions often gets us in the messes we're in already. We have to take practical steps to set safeguards in our lives. So let's look at this, alive and free. What places do I need to avoid? Right now, maybe you're in places, maybe the hard truth is God has a purpose and a calling in your life, and you keep going into places where he's saying, don't go, and you're not able to do what he wants you to do. He's like, just avoid that, and you can do what I called you to do. What places do you need to avoid? What rooftops, what temptation do I need to get off of? What am I flirting with that I need to be running from, right? And what hard choices do I need to make so I can avoid hard choices down the road? I wish David would have done that. I bet you if you asked David if he was around, he'd say, yeah, I wish I would have never done that. But I want to end with some good news, because the gospel is good news. Jesus wins. And the good news is this. Maybe you've come in here today with a mile long of messes. You've jumped over every single safeguard you have put in place. Other people have put in place. Here's what I want you to hear. God's not going to give up on you. Right? That's what you need to hear. God's not going to give up on you. And whatever you've done is not the end of your story. However your marriage is right now doesn't have to be the way it ends. Whatever your relationship with addiction is doesn't have to be the way it ends. Whatever problems you had in your past doesn't have to be your future. But we got to make some changes, right? And what we got to realize is that God does offer us the life to live alive and free. He offers us this. Here's what he does. God is the business of restoration and restoring broken things. God can take the ugliest mess and make something beautiful out of it. That's exactly what he does with David and Bathsheba. Now there's consequences. That's what no one talks about. Sin, bad decisions, and messes bring consequences. And they may have long consequences, but doesn't mean that God can't work. David and Bathsheba have another baby. And they name that baby Solomon. Solomon becomes the third king of Israel. Solomon is for a while is a good king. They call him the wisest man besides Jesus to ever live. But eventually, Solomon falls into some of the same mistakes that his father makes. That's why generations matter, why us leading the next generation matters, because someone's always watching. And so Solomon compromises and compromises. Ironically, some of his biggest compromises were with women as well. And Solomon, just like his father, becomes a broken king. But God promised David something a long time ago, that eventually the greatest king of all time would come from his family line. And eventually there was a king named, born of a young teenage girl named Mary, named Jesus, the Son of God. And Jesus comes from the family line of David, Bathsheba, and Solomon. If that's not restoration, I don't know what is. And Jesus comes on, and he comes on the scene, and we covered that for 17 weeks. We won't cover it again. But he offers us a live and free life. He says, I have a life for you far greater than you can imagine. I'm telling you today, one of the simplest ways to step into that life is create safeguards. I want to take you to a psalm real quick. Psalm 51, this is a psalm David wrote, scholars believe, after he gets confronted about his sin by a prophet named Nathan, right? Nathaniel. And this is what David writes in Psalm 51, 10. It says, create in me a clean heart, O God. Renew a loyal spirit within me. Maybe today our prayer needs to be, God, create in me a clean heart. Make it obvious to me what safeguards I need in my life so I can renew my spirit in you and step into the life that you have for me. That's the plan for this series. That's what God wants to do in your life. So today, maybe just pray. God, create a new heart in me. Renew a new spirit in me. Get me on track with you. Make it clear whatever safeguards I need to add, I'll add, because I'm choosing hard today to avoid hard consequences down the road. Let's pray. God, we're so thankful for who you are. God, I'm thankful that we're broken and we're messy, but you're the business of cleaning up messes and you're the king of restoration. God, and it's amazing that you work in our lives. I thank you for each and every person here and their stories. God, I want somebody here today for the first time. God's not done. You're not done. You're just beginning. No matter where they've been, doesn't mean that's where they have to stay. Father, so take us to the life that you have for us and let us live in the life that you want to offer us. Live alive and free. It's in your name we pray. Amen.